Onu yönetiminin de sıcağına cenasına kadar çaksı sümde tenzeyine tersmen suyu yürübeyni mağdur. Suyu içe kanyamını bizdam, stapitam zeyni bitele. Sayam, yupak adamayam, nadati sapadantikam. Anca kapatı gözca, kıpısın yüküve kça, petitinam babine bu, vasıvi gülmanla. Onun dışına kudaya, kesin mustay bu tele, sümeti gokti gülanda, şamnitinam. Namaste Saraswati Devi Guru Nipa Charmini Nidhisesha Samir Hare Kuskati Desatamani. We heard last time how Brahmananda Bharati was speaking. It was a great sannyasi, who had seen it to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was speaking. He had just come to Jagannath Puri, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately wanted to see him because that's the etiquette, that you go to see the superiors. You don't request the superiors to come and see you. So since he was on the level of his spiritual master, Mahaprabhu went to see him. But then when he saw Brahmananda Bharati, Brahmananda Bharati was wearing a deer skin, which is often that type of cloth, not cloth, but that type of clothing is often worn by Mayavadi sannyasis. And when Brahmananda Bharati was wearing a deer skin, which is a very renounced thing to do, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood his heart and understood that the point that was driving his desire to wear a deer skin was less renunciation but more pride. I'm a renunciant. I'm a renounced person. I'm in the higher platform. So when he went to see Brahmananda Bharati and he saw that he was wearing a deer skin and he perceived that his motivation, there was pride in his motivation, he said, I don't see Brahmananda Bharati. Where is he? And he was with Paps Govinda. Govinda said, he's right in front of you. He said, no, this is not Brahmananda Bharati. This is a mistake. Couldn't be Brahmananda Bharati. He wouldn't be wearing a deer skin like this. So Brahmananda Bharati, being a very internal and introspective soul, he didn't react in a negative way. Because when someone corrects us in that way and challenges our false sense of who we are, we often become quite upset with them. That's the reaction, the natural reaction of a soul who is living in the land of false ego, living out of his false egos. But Brahmananda Bharati, being very, very pure, despite his deer skin, and he was very, very humble, despite that little element of pride. So when he understood that Mahaprabhu didn't appreciate his deer skin, he also noted that, yes, it's true. There's pride in my wearing the deer skin as my cloth, as my clothing. So he therefore vowed not to wear it anymore. And then a discussion took place. And as soon as he made that internal vow, Mahaprabhu recognized him. Oh, here is Brahmananda Bharati. He immediately offered his respectful obeisances to him. Because again, he was in a superior position, even though Mahaprabhu being the Lord is in the supremely superior position. So to set the example and follow the regular etiquette, he offered his obeisances to Brahmananda Bharati. And then a discussion took place. Because Brahmananda Bharati understood that Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Lord, and he in the discussion, he put him in the same category as Lord Jagannath. Brahmananda Bharati put Mahaprabhu in the category of Lord Jagannath as the Supreme Lord, and Mahaprabhu resisted that, and then he said, no, you and I are jivas, individual souls, and we are in the same category as individual souls. And then Brahmananda Bharati asked Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to mediate, to reach a decision in this, and he took the side of Brahmananda Bharati and said yes, saying that Mahaprabhu was actually the Supreme Lord. And actually, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he first met Mahaprabhu several years before, Mahaprabhu revealed to him a six-arm form of himself. And in two arms, he was Lord Ramachandra in two arms, he was with two ex, and he was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the other feature of Krishna was also within the Sambhujo six-arm form. So then the discussion continues, and we got up to reading a purport.
What text is that?
This is 174, around that, in chapter 10. But he's very interesting, because they're very, very clever exchanges of words. So Mahaprabhu said, therefore I must accept what you say, because you are my superior. And Brahmananda Bharati wasn't going to be defeated by that, because he knew that Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Lord. So his reply was, no, that's not the reason why you're agreeing. The reason that you're agreeing is that you are the Supreme Lord, and it is the nature of the Supreme Lord to accept defeat in the hands of his devotee. And this is such a bhaktavatsalya atma prajanta vadanyata. This is one of the most beloved qualities of the Lord, that he's captivated by the love of his devotees. He's defeated by the love of his devotees. And this is what is going on in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. Krishna is continuously captivated by the love of his devotees, even though he is the all-powerful, unlimitedly powerful Supreme Lord. Yet his devotees' affection for him places him in under their control. Atma, bhaktavatsalya atma prajanta vadanyata. It causes the Lord to lean in the direction of his devotees. So then Brahmananda Bharati in text 175 says, I have been meditating on the impersonal Brahman, means the all-pervading aspect of the Lord, which is certainly real, because he is, if we call him the Lord or the Ishvara, the controller, that it doesn't really define who Krishna is. Rather than being the Ishvara or the controller, or the Parameshwara, the supreme controller, which is how usually people will think of God, but rather he is actually the absolute truth, Param Satyam in Sanskrit, the absolute truth. And the difference, so the absolute truth has many aspects to it, because it is all inclusive. So to see the oneness of everything, that everything is Krishna, and Krishna's energy is a specific vision of the absolute truth. And one Vedanti tat tatvavidyas tatvam yajnanam adayam brahmeti paramatmiti bhagavaniti sabite. So to see, if one tries to understand this absolute truth, which is really the purpose of life, to understand the supreme absolute truth, if one tries adopts the methods of jnana, or finding knowledge, or an ascending process, or using one's intelligence, one's own ability to discern, understand the absolute truth, then one will understand him as all pervading, that he is everywhere, because the if he is absolute truth, then there can be no place where he is, where he doesn't exist. So understand how the absolute truth is everywhere present by his energies. If one approaches that absolute truth by the process of jnana yoga, then he will come to that realization that God is everything, and nothing is separate from him. No, I'm not separate. No one is. Nothing is separate. Well, that's true, but it's not the fullest of understandings. And then if one approaches that absolute truth by yoga, then one will understand Paramatma, that how the absolute truth is everywhere, and the absolute truth is everywhere by in a form. But the form has qualities, but it doesn't have so much personality, and that is called Paramatma, the Lord in the heart. It's qualities and form, but not so much. He doesn't reveal much of his personality. And then if one approaches the absolute truth through bhakti, then that absolute truth reveals the more intimate aspects of himself, which means his personality. It's quite reasonable, this understanding, because It's true in all places. We have, in psychological terms, the term is persona, or the aspect of ourself, how we want others to perceive us. So we act in a particular way so that others will perceive us in a particular way. And if we have a position, say for the CEO of some company or something like that, our dealings, our persona will be as the chief executive officer, and we don't reveal much of our personality and what we, and the specifics of what we like and what we don't like. We're in an official position. So that is like the, we have qualities when we're the CEO, we're efficient, we're strict sometimes, we're playful sometimes, but we don't reveal our full personality. But then when the CEO gets home, he takes off his shoes, hopefully, and he relaxes, and he jokes with his children, and sometimes they wrestle. Do you ever wrestle with your father? No, he will easily defeat you, yes? I think so. You wrestle with your younger brother? You easily defeat him, yes?
Yes.
Yes. So in any case, different aspects of one's personality are revealed depending upon the intimacy that people of the relationship that people have with us. So Brahmananda Bharati had previously been meditating, he says in this verse. I was a muni before, which means I was a nirakara dhyan. He was meditating on the formless aspect of the Lord through jnana. But that takes a purity, but it's not enough to understand the personality of Godhead. So he says, I've been meditating on the impersonal Brahman since my birth, but since I've seen you, by being confronted with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says, I have fully experienced Krishna. The depth and intimacy of my understanding of the Absolute Truth has shifted from understanding the all-pervasive nature of the Absolute Truth to the understanding the personal nature, which includes the all-pervasive nature. So he was fully experiencing Krishna because his consciousness was so pure, he was able to do that. Because we don't see exactly with our eyes, we see with our, according to our level of consciousness. When one person sees the ocean, he may see, oh, I wish I brought my fishing rod with me so I could catch a nice fish. And then when I catch the fish, I will take him home and I won't say what he'll do with him. And how he catches the fish, we won't talk about. But one person, when he sees the ocean, he sees fish. Another person, he looks at the ocean and he looks at the waves and he sees, oh, this will be a very, what day is this? The swell's up, the surf is up, then I can board it. Same ocean, but the consciousness is different. And another person sees the ocean and is reminded of the Yamuna River. And he sees, oh, Krishna would play in the Yamuna River. And things like that. And another person, a marine biologist, will look at the ocean and he'll see in a different way. And a person who's once seen a shark, soon as he sees the ocean, he'll think of a shark. So depending upon one's consciousness, one sees. One doesn't see reality as it is. And everyone generally is quite proud and thinking, well, I see reality, and this is the truth, and then we argue with others who have a different point of view, but the reality is that everyone has a different point of view, because everyone has a different viewpoint, because we're tiny, and we only see from our, we have a view from our little point, and only Krishna sees from all points, so he only knows reality. We just get our little glimpse of part of reality. So in any case, Brahmananda Bharati, upon being in the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his consciousness was already pure, not fully developed to the highest realization of the Absolute Truth, but so pure on the transcendental platform. So when he saw it, was confronted with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he immediately understood, this is Krishna. Now here's Prabhupada's book. Brahmananda Bharati admitted that when there is an argument between the spiritual master and the disciple, the spiritual master is naturally victorious, though the disciple may put forward a strong argument. In other words, it is customary that the words of the spiritual master are more worshipable than the words of a disciple. This is spoken from a higher level. So the disciple is speaking from one level, and his statements may be true from that level, but they won't be as significant or as weighty as his teachers. Just like a student in the third, what grade are you in now?
Five.
Fifth grade. And what type of mathematics are you learning?
We're learning area of pyramidal.
Okay. Okay. So basic multiplication and ways to understand the formulas for understanding area and perimeter. Okay.
Yes.
Now, but if someone told you the derivative of a squared plus b squared minus to the fourth power, the square root of xb to the fourth power equals, now that's mathematics too. So that's on a different level, with all respect to your... So if you say, no, 7 times 65 is what? Okay, in any case, let's see, no one pulled out their mobile phones. How else could we understand such a thing? Do you know?
I think it's 485.
Yeah, something like that.
455.
Yeah, okay, something like that. But who's counting? Why quibble over details? So in any case, how many of you figured it out? Well, after I said it, how many of you, your minds naturally tried to figure it out? Okay. So truth can be spoken on different levels, like mathematics can be spoken on different levels. So the higher level, even though the lower level may be true or strong, the higher level should be accepted as more potent or higher or more weighty, we would say. So therefore, Prabhupada saying, even though the disciple may put forward a strong argument, in other words, it is customary that the words of the spiritual master are more worshipable than the words of a disciple. Under the circumstances, since Brahmananda Bharati was in the position of a spiritual master, he emerged victorious over Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who considered himself Brahmananda Bharati's disciple. So that was one level of what was going on that I tried to explain. However, Brahmananda Bharati reversed the argument and took the position of a devotee, admitting that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord was voluntarily defeated out of affection for the devotee. He was defeated voluntarily because no one can defeat the Supreme Lord. That is practically a definition of one of the aspects of the Supreme Lord. He's undefeatable because no one is more powerful. He's asama. Urdhva. No one is greater than him and no one is equal to him. He is the supreme. So no one can defeat him, yet he becomes defeated by the love of his devotees. So that was the point of view that Brahmananda Bharati used to interpret Mahaprabhu accepting what you say is true. He was defeated voluntarily because no one can defeat the Supreme Lord. Concerning this, the words of Bhishma in Srimad Bhagavatam are important. Swa nagamam apa haya mat pratigyam ritam adhikartum avapluto ratasta dhritarat charano vyayat chaladur hari ivahantum ivam gutotariya. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the way. So this is from the 9th chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, a very special chapter, a very special section of the Bhagavatam. Bhishma Dev is on his deathbed, and Krishna has come to be present before him when Bhishma Dev is leaving this world, and he's with the Pandavas and the other devotees. So when it comes for the exact time for Bhishma to leave, he wants to focus his mind on Krishna. Why? Krishna's right there, but why does he want to focus his mind on Krishna?
Because Krishna says, whatever you think is a diamond, that's
what's the Sanskrit? Yeah, but... Yeah, yes. Antakale, at the end of life. Ante Narayana Smriti. So why is it important to, or Yam Yam Vapi Smaram Bhavam, a little bit more general principle, that whatever fills our consciousness, whatever thoughts and bhava moods fill our consciousness when it's time for the soul to depart from the body, that will determine the next body that we take. Adhishtha Manasteyam Visha Upasevate. Whatever fills our consciousness when it's at the time of our death will determine our next body. Because the body will be left behind, the gross body. This thing will be left behind. But the mind, the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, false ego, and the soul, etc., they will be carried to the next body according to the what fills the consciousness. What do you think about that? Shaking your head. No, pretty dangerous. Because what's going to fill our consciousness at the time of death? What's our filling our consciousness in our life? That's what will be in our consciousness at the time of death. Do you have a pet fish, goldfish? Say if you had a pet fish, goldfish, little, very, very cute goldfish, and every day you really like your fish. You know there's a kind of fish called an angel fish? Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, I mean, not really an angel, but it's called an angel fish. I don't know why. But if you really like your fish, your goldfish, and then suddenly, boom, it comes time for you to leave this world, and you're thinking of your very, very, very dear fish. What will happen? It's a very frightening thought. So Bhishma Dev, he was so thrilled because it was time for him to leave this world, and Krishna himself had appeared before him, the Supreme Lord, Lord Narayan. And he wanted to fill his consciousness with Krishna consciousness, as he was departing. He wanted to fill his mind. So he was remembering with great affection all his dealings with Krishna. He wanted, as Krishna was right before him, beautiful Krishna had come out of his affection for his devotee. So the particular verse that's mentioned here is something that Bhishma Dev said. He was recalling like a mental picture of Krishna in his mind during the battle of Kurukshetra, because Krishna had promised to not participate in the battle, to fight, take up weapons, but he was acting as Arjuna's chariot driver. And on one day of the battle, Bhishma had vowed, because of Duryodhana's chastising him almost, that he was showing favoritism for the Pandavas. So Bhishma Dev he took out 5 arrows. And he vowed, on the next day, to show you that I'm not favoring the Pandavas, that I'm fighting on your side, I will take it, reserve one of these arrows for each of the Pandavas, and I will kill them. So he vowed like that. And Bhishma Dev was no martial arts lightweight. He was the heaviest of all warriors. He had incredible potencies for fighting. So when Duryodhana heard that, he was thrilled, and he said, I will keep those 5 arrows for the night, and I will give them to you in the morning for safekeeping. So somehow or another, Krishna told Arjuna about this. So Krishna went to Duryodhana, and Duryodhana owed him a favor, so to speak. One time, Arjuna had saved his life, even though they were now on opposing sides. They were cousins. So Arjuna had saved Duryodhana's life. So he said, at that time, years before, he said, whatever you want, you can ask me for anything. Whatever you want, I'll give you. So Arjuna said, I won't take that now, but later on, What's the word when you have, like you have a voucher, you redeem, redeem. I will redeem my my voucher with you. So Krishna said you should go to him and ask him for these five arrows. So Arjuna approached him because they would fight during the day, but in the evening and night they put down their weapons and they interacted even, and the next day they would kill each other. There was some honor and nobility in how they acted. So the next day, that evening, Arjuna went to Duryodhana, and he said, "Remember that time, and you made that vow that you'll give me whatever I want?" And Duryodhana said, "Yes, I do remember that. What do you want?" "If you want my head, I'll give it to you. If you want the whole kingdom, I'll give it to you." Because these warriors were such honorable people. They were fighting over the kingdom, and he said, "I'll give you the kingdom if you want." And Arjuna said, "No, I don't want that." He said, "Well, what do you want?" "I want the five arrows." And when he said that, Duryodhana realized Krishna's behind this. So he gave him the five arrows, and the next day Bhishma was like a raging storm because he had vowed to kill the Pandavas. So while he was attacking Arjuna with such fury, with such force and determination to kill Arjuna, was one of the Pandavas, that Krishna himself rushed towards Bhishma with the broken wheel of a chariot in his hand, raised over his head. Actually, there's a wonderful painting of this. It was on the cover of one BTG many, 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 many years ago. And Krishna was angry that his devotee was being threatened. Arjuna was such a great devotee. Krishna had vowed not to participate in the battle, to take up any weapons, but to protect his devotee. Kanteya patijanihi Nami Bhakta Pranashiti. So Krishna broke his own promise to protect his devotee. So Krishna's promise is very dear to him, like everyone's promise is dear to themselves. But there are some things even more dear than one's promise. So what's the dearest thing to Krishna is his relationship with his devotee. So this is such a lovable characteristic of Krishna. So Krishna, Prabhupada continues, and this is the last paragraph of the purport. Krishna promised not to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, but in order to break Krishna's promise, Bhishma attacked Arjuna in such a vigorous way that Krishna was obliged to take up a chariot wheel and attack Bhishma. The Lord did this to show that his devotee was being maintained at the sacrifice of his own promise. So that aspect of Krishna was in the mind of Bhishma, and his heart had melted because he was seeing, look at this Krishna. He's the unlimited powerful Lord, and look what he's done. He's sacrificed his own word to protect his devotee. How dear Krishna is to a devotee. And then he remembered how dear the devotee is to Krishna. And then he remembered that Krishna was so kind that he had appeared before him right now at the time of his death, even though he had been fighting on the other side. So he's remembering that, and therefore that Krishna was kind to Arjuna, and how kind he is to me. And therefore his consciousness was focused on Krishna with great, great affection. The Lord did this to show that his devotee was being maintained at the sacrifice of his own promise. Brahmananda Bharati said, "Since the beginning of my life, I was attached to impersonal Brahman realization. But as soon as I saw you, I became very much attached to the personality of Godhead, Krishna." Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Lord Krishna himself, and thus Brahmananda Bharati became his devotee. So this again, in this chapter, is how all the devotees from Jagannath Puri and some of the ones who had come from outside of Jagannath Puri, they all opened up their relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Next text. Brahmananda Bharati continued, "Since I have been seeing you, I have been feeling Lord Krishna's presence in my mind, and I have been seeing him before my eyes I now want to chant the holy name of Lord Krishna. In other words, his realization had shifted by the influence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from the Brahman level, seeing the Lord is everywhere, the absolute truth everywhere, to the Bhagavan level, the personal form. I now want to chant the holy name of Lord Krishna. Before, he only wanted to meditate, just sit silently like a muni in a place and just meditate on how everything is none different from Krishna. But now, in your presence, I want to chant Krishna's names. Over and above this, within my heart, I consider you to be Krishna, and I'm therefore eager to...
Serve you.
Yes, I thought someone was going to say, see you. But no, he said, I'm very eager to serve you. Because that is the natural relationship we have with Krishna. And Krishna Bhule Seji, turning our back on Krishna, we end up, we don't want to serve, we want to be masters ourselves. So, Radhika, where have you been? Were you outside playing? So, we end up serving anyway because it's our constitutional natural dharma, our natural position is to serve. That means it's unavoidable. It's unavoidable. So, we want to be masters, but we end up serving. So, when that, the natural thing is when we take our constitutionally natural tendencies to serve, and when they are when those tendencies and the service is offered to Krishna, to God with love, then everything is in its right place. So, but that takes purity of consciousness. Such a purity of consciousness it takes, sincerity, but a purity of consciousness that means that the heart, mind, consciousness will be free from all the other desires that plague everyone and just want to serve the Supreme Lord. So he was very eager to serve Krishna. And then Bilamangala Thakur abandoned his impersonal realization for the realization of the personality of Godhead. I now see that my condition is similar to his, for it has already changed. Purport. In his early life, Bilamangala Thakur was an impersonalist monist, and he used to meditate upon the impersonal Brahman effulgence. Later, he became a devotee of Lord Krishna, and his explanation of this change is given in verse in text 178, the next verse that is quoted in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion. Gradually, one comes to the stage of Bhagavan realization of the Supreme Person, after having attained the lower stages of realization, impersonal Brahman realization and localized Paramatma realization. This is described in Chaitanya Chandramrita by Prabodhananda Saraswati. Kaivalyam Narakayate Dridasapura Kashipushpayate Durdantendriya Kalasarpa Patali Prokata Damstrayate Vishram Purna Sukhayate Vidhi Mahendradis Cha Kitayate Yat Karuna Kataksha Baiba Vatam Tam Guram Eva Stamaha. Kaivalya, oneness in the effulgence of Brahman appears hellish to the devotee. The heavenly planets, the abodes of the demigods, appear to a devotee like phantasmagoria, I mean non-existence. The yogis meditate for sense control, but for the devotees, the senses appear like serpents with broken teeth. They are not fearsome. The devotee doesn't have to control his senses, for his senses are already engaged in the Lord's service. Consequently, there is no possibility that the senses will act like serpents. In the material condition, the senses are as strong as poisonous snakes. When the teeth are broken, the snake is no longer dangerous. The entire world is a replica of Vaikuntha for the devotee because he has no anxiety. So this is a non-literal explanatory translation of the verse by Prabodhananda Saraswati, but I'm reading it quickly. He sees that everything belongs to Krishna and he doesn't want to enjoy anything for himself. So this is the comment on Vishva Purnam Sukhayate, the whole Vishva, the whole universe, is Purnam Sukhayate. It's full and free of, full of happiness for a devotee. It is not, because usually we criticize the material world as Dukalayam, Shashvatam, Nityam, Sukham Lokam, a miserable place. But here, for a devotee who sees everything in relationship to serving Krishna, Vishva Purnam Sukhayate, the world is the most glorious place. There is no anxiety, because anxiety comes from fear, mostly, from the difference between what we want to happen and what is actually happening, or afraid of what is happening. That's the cause of anxiety. So the devotee, he has no selfishness. Such an exalted soul has no selfishness, so therefore he wants to serve Krishna only. So therefore, no anxiety. Krishna bhakti nischam, niskam ata eva shanta. Bhukti mukti siddhikami shakala ashanta. See, we think of what our difficulties are. We usually would think that it's because I don't have what I want. But actually, the difficulties are we want, because we want things that won't give us happiness, and we're competing with everyone else for those things. So much anxiety, so much fear. So an exalted devotee sees Krishna's hand in everything, and therefore he can wander in this world peacefully with no anxiety, because he sees Krishna's mercy in everything. And therefore, Mahaprabhu, when he was traveling in South India, and sadhus, holy people, even today, they try to minimize what they have and their needs, and just wander, even without possessions, depending on Krishna in this world. And they can be peaceful and they feel free. They can sleep anywhere, just outside somewhere. Of course, if you try to do that in Perth, you'll end up in the jail. But the principle of, because people want to accumulate wealth, especially, and because wealth means influence. You can control. Wealth means shakti. It's power. So you can control with it, and then by controlling, you can do what you want. So the purpose of it is to be independent. So when you're independent, you can get the pleasures that you want, and you can remove the difficulties as you want. So these holy people, what they would do is just minimize their material necessities and only want Krishna, and then they would wander. And there was such freedom that they felt, because they didn't have the traps. They weren't bound by the traps of everyone who had so many material desires, because as soon as you have one material desire, then you try to satisfy that, and then it gives birth to five material desires. The attempt to satisfy it. Say you want a house. So as soon as you want a house, what do you have to do? And then as soon as you get a job, you have to have a boss, and you have to work like that, and not only that, and then you have on, and then you have to make friends with the bank manager and get a loan, and they smile at you. Do you know that the bank people have quotas that they have to get every month to give out money? And you think they do that out of the goodness in their heart? No, if you do think so. The bank manager, did you know they have quotas?
Yeah.
They have to give out a certain amount of money every month. And that's, so it's such a funny, not funny, but it's such a peculiar world. So they have to do that. And the more money you give out, the better off you are. So that means your tendency is want to give out money, regardless of, because you want to get higher, so regardless of whether the loan is secure or not. So built in there is a tendency for cheating, and therefore, anyway, this is what happened. This is like the great financial crisis, so many, like 2008 or whatever. This is what it was, that they gave out so much loans that didn't have any security, and then they sold those loans to people. to big banks, and those big banks sold them to other people. And then, but there was nothing behind it because the people couldn't. Anyway, we're not going to have a class on finances now, and nor could I teach one. But built so much entanglement is built into all to try to fulfill our material desires. And as soon as you want to fulfill one desire, immediately gives birth to five. And then each one of those, when you try to fulfill them, gives birth to another five. So, and nothing ever works out exactly the way you had imagined or planned. Have you noticed that? But it's just much more complicated. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that? No, not yet. Huh? But you should stay young. That's what the four Kumaras did. It was a brilliant decision. How old would you like to be? If you could be any age you wanted, how old would you like to be?
12.
Okay. There's probably a lot of people in this room that would like to be 12 also. 12. But it's always something different than what you are. Did you notice? Mm-hmm. It's different. What you want to be is different than what you are. Because we tend to imagine that it will be better when you're 12, for example. So at a certain point, it reverses. When you're young, you want to be older. But then when you're old, you want to be younger. In any case. So for a devotee whose only desire is to actually, he's in love, he wants to please his beloved, he wants to please the Supreme Lord. So for him, Vishwapurna Sukhayate, even the material world becomes full of happiness. He sees that everything belongs to Krishna. He does not want to enjoy anything for himself. Amazing, isn't it? He has no tendency to take even a small percentage for himself. Whatever Krishna gives me, okay. And he just sees he's in love. That's the only way to explain it. You can't do it by your intelligence. From now on, I'm not going to want anything for me. I'm just going to only, just, you know, it's a matter of bhakti. It's a matter of love for Krishna. Then it's the most natural thing. Otherwise, it's imposed and it doesn't work. He does not even aspire for the position of Brahma or Indra, Lord Brahma or Indra. He doesn't even want the topmost position of this world. He simply wants to engage everything in the service of the Lord. Therefore, he has no problem. He stands in his original constitutional position. And all this is possible. How can one achieve such elevated consciousness? All this is possible when one receives Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's merciful glance. So it can be done only, that consciousness can be is by mercy only, mercy of Mahaprabhu. In the Chaitanya Chandramrita, there are many, many more verses illustrating the same principle than this one here. A discussion of the impersonal Brahman is not very palatable. What does palatable mean?
Tasty.
Good for the tongue.
Good, tasty, we'll say. Yeah, it's not very tasty for a devotee. The so-called regulations of the Shastra also appear null and void to him. He doesn't have to follow the rules and regulations because he's achieved the purpose of what the rules and regulations are meant to award. There are many principles, there are many people who want to argue over the Shastra, but for a devotee such discussions are but tumultuous roaring. In other words, not pleasing at all. By the influence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all these problems disappear. Okay, let's stop here. Any questions or comments?
It's astounding that just by saying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Brahma and Bharati was having visions of
But was it by his seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu seeing him? Both. But he's putting it on up. Please give me, put your mercy, the devotees pray, please put your merciful glance upon me. Mm. Which is a different viewpoint. We tend to want to see the Lord, and then that will make strengthen our devotion or something like that. But it's the opposite. The devotees actually have an opposite point of view, that allow the Lord to see me and let me act in such a way that it's pleasing to the Lord. But yes, it's amazing. And that's the topic that will be will continue to be discussed, how his consciousness was elevated just by having seen the Lord and having the Lord see him.
Who was Brahmananda Bharati's spiritual master?
It doesn't say directly, but he was in the Bharati Sampradaya, which means impersonalist. Mahaprabhu was also technically in the Bharati Sampradaya, but it doesn't say.
So
I don't know.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers were initiating the impersonal sampradayas, but taking the path of personal.
His sannyas guru was in Ukasu, he was a Bharati. So this was his sannyas guru. That's his sannyas name, Brahmananda Bharati.
Yeah, because that gives background of a lot of these personalities and all.
There may be more information about Brahmananda Bharati, but I don't know it. And who, what his history was, and why Mahaprabhu was so eager to see him. He might have been famous at that time. Well, I don't know why. Google it. How else do we learn anything?
At the end, you mentioned about the consciousness in the Lord.
Mm.
So, for a devotee is trying to do their best in whatever condition they are and to serve the Lord and to serve the order of the spiritual master.
Excuse me, just a sec, because my mind is. Yeah. I'll look and see if I can find out more information on Brahman and the devotee. Yeah, sorry.
So the devotee is trying to serve the Lord at the best of their capability, to the level of consciousness therein, and trying to serve the order of the spiritual master, and trying to purify themselves through that process. Now, and we also mentioned that devotee, because he's relishing when he's serving, so he can be happy in this material world as well. When I said he can be in, he's because of his consciousness. Doesn't matter where he is, because of his relationship with the Lord, he can be happy anywhere. So, but for us to go back home, that ultimately depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. We just have to keep doing what we're doing. Just try to follow the instructions of the Krishna.
Well, there's two ways to look at it. We should try to increase our love for Krishna, too. That's the other way. We don't just depend on the mercy of the Lord. That's his side. That's in the relationship between us and him. Then his duty is to give, his part of the relationship is to be merciful, but our part is to sincerely serve and take to the process to try to develop our love for him and be longing for that love. So the fact that that we're ultimately dependent on mercy shouldn't stop us from doing our part in trying to develop the consciousness that attracts his mercy. Ultimately, it depends on his mercy. Yeah. Ultimately, it depends on his mercy. Even the desire to love Krishna depends on it. Even our part also will depend on his mercy, but that's not how. Yeah.
So in this case, would that come like, obviously remembrance and forgetfulness come from him? So again, it comes back to our desire. If our desire is there, then...
But then you could take that argument even more, that even our desire comes from him. So therefore, I don't have to do anything. Anyway, if he wants, I just open my mouth, and if he wants me to eat, food will come into my mouth. Why should I even bother opening my mouth? If he wants my mouth to open, it will open. So it can become silly. So that which attracts the causeless mercy is the sincere desire to please him. So when that sincere desire to please him, and he's pleased by good, by love only, snami paratatmana, by offerings made with love, with devotion. So when we go about our life sincerely trying to please him, with not desiring anything else other than his pleasure, then that will attract his mercy. Oh, my devotee is so sincere. His mercy is called causeless mercy. That means there's nothing in one sense that we can do to extract it from him. It's coming from him.
So is that sincere desire to please him the same as volume?
Some
same quality,
perhaps a different thickness of it, but yeah. Mm. Yeah, when Lolyam Apimula Mekalam means that it's literally translated, Lolyam means like greed, like loba. So you can say is sincere desire to have a lot of money, is that the same as greed? So you could say yes, but if you crank it up a lot, then you get greed. Mm-hmm. You can't live without, I have no other thought except I need to get that money, then you're talking about what greed is. So when greed is like the transcendentally placed desire that nothing has value other than to awaken my relationship with Krishna, whatever it takes, I'm doing that, that's more what greed is. Mm. So it's...
intensified.
Very exactly the word. I just couldn't find.
And just where in this, in the pauselessness between the Lord and between us, where does the spiritual master comes in? Because he's also playing his part, giving us...
What will cause the Lord to... Well, not only... But the Vaishnavas, spiritual master and Vaishnavas, where does that part comes in? If they, this is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion, there are two ways that one gets the Lord's mercy. And each one of those has three different features, if I remember correctly. But it's either by the Lord or the Lord's devotee. So on one level, so it's generally by the Lord's devotee, because that's the way that the Lord expresses his mercy in this world, through the devotees. Because the devotees carry Kripa Shakti, his merciful, his potency of mercy. Mercy is a potency, one of his Shaktis, power. So that's what the devotees carry. So you could say that there's no difference between the Lord's mercy and the devotee's mercy. Or you could say that the devotee is more merciful. There's different ways you can say it. Usually we say the devotee is more merciful. But we also say that the Lord is so merciful that he gives his holy names.
In the case of Prahlad Maharaj, Hiranyakashipu, because to keep the word of his devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, that he wanted his father, being, you know, such a demon, but still he got liberated because of the devotee's desire. Mm.
But also he was Javilde. So you could say, so why did he come down as Jai and Vijay, as Jai or Vijay? He came down because of the curse of the four Kumaras. So if you read that chapter of the third canto very carefully, it's so interesting. So you could say it's because of the curse of the four Kumaras. And then when Lord Narayan is explaining this, he says Lakshmi Devi cursed them. So it wasn't actually the four Kumaras curse that caused Dayan Vijay to descend to this world. Lakshmi Devi had cursed them, she was angry at them. But then he says, but actually it was my desire. So you could trace everything back to Krishna, or you could, depends on what level you want to look at it.
There's an interesting comment in Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary on that pastime, that it was actually Jayan Vijay's desire. They thought the Lord wanted someone to fight with.
Yeah.
But there was no one equal to the Lord other than the devotees, equal in a sense. So they couldn't stand the idea that the Lord was unhappy even for a moment. So they said, let us fight with the Lord, and let us let whatever happened to us that is needed so that we can fight with the Lord.
So that's the mood of the devotee. So
they can't understand that. They can't tolerate a moment's unhappiness in the Lord. So they went through that whole deal of being Hiranyakashipu and Ravana and Shishupal and Dandavakra, because they couldn't stand a moment's unhappiness for the Lord.
Mm. Very sweet. What do you think of that? I think, were you listening to that part? Or did your mind wander? Because it's getting late. And you don't have to go to school tomorrow, do you? What time will you get up? Huh? Because tomorrow is Sunday.
I go to coach classes.
Oh, really? You're getting coached in tennis or what?
Study maths, English, and creative writing.
And creative writing. Can you write creatively? Huh?
Not really.
You've been sitting for so long, you must be bored. Little. Okay, we'll end then. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.